Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Jenny Vrentis, joined by Kalen Kaler. Welcome, Kalen. We have a lot to break down today. We will start with the Sunday night game. The Texans' big statement 28-22 win against New England. The Texans had only beaten the Patriots once in franchise history a decade ago, so this was truly a meaningful win, vanquishing a longtime foe atop the AFC that has seemed to always be the one hurdle that the Texans couldn't overcome. It was always the thing that, well, the Texans are good enough, but they're not going to beat the Patriots when it really matters, and here they were. They beat them at home. Bad game for the Patriots in a lot of areas. It looked like they would have their third straight game of 17 points or less, although then they scored a late touchdown. But, you know, Brady connecting at about 50%, much lower than you would like, obviously. And the defense, it was the second time this season they gave up more than 20 points. The other was the loss to the Ravens. And now the Patriots are not in the number one spot in the AFC, for the time being at least. They are 10-2 along with the Ravens, but the Ravens, of course, have the head-to-head tiebreaker. So let's start, Kalen, with who did we learn more about Sunday night, the Patriots or the Texans?
Man, honestly, I would probably say the Texans just because I'm so inclined to not read into the Patriots just because of like everything that we've ever seen from them in the past. I mean, the whole game, I remember you and I were actually at the Texans Patriots, I think it was in 2016, that playoff game where the Texans like had the lead, I think, for through the whole first half, and then they fell apart at the end. But I remember I was sort of thinking of that during this whole game, like, oh, there's no way, you know, there's no way this is going to hold. The Patriots are going to come back. Like, it's just going to be as it always is. So instinctually, I'm like so inclined to like not hot take the Patriots and say like, oh, you know, they have a real problem this season with the offense, although I think they do have a real problem. The question is it a permanent problem for the season or is it something that they can work through? Because it looks like Brady really only has, as we've seen all season, one receiver out there, Edelman, that he's comfortable with and that he trusts. His frustration really seemed to reach kind of a boiling point in this game, you could tell. And even at the end of the game, it was surprising to me. They just seemed really slow still, even though they had such a point differential to make up. I just didn't see a lot of tempo or speed in their offense when they probably could have used it. I guess this is a long answer to say. I think it shows us more about the Texans because I just think it would be naive to write off the Patriots at this point and say, oh, these offensive woes are going to be too much for them to overcome. Like, I don't think we can say that at this point. But I think with the Texans, the really interesting thing about this game is it almost showed more about, you know, like an improvement for the Texans defense to me. And that defense has been struggling all year to really put pieces together. And obviously Jacob Martin really stood out in this game. And the interesting thing about that is that I think at the beginning of the season when the Texans traded Jadeveon Clowney to the Seahawks, Jacob Martin was one of those players that came back to them from Seattle. And at the time, I think everybody really wrote it off as like, well, who's that guy? Like, never heard of him. He was a 6th-round pick in 2018 for Seattle. And I think at the time, we all thought, oh, this is a classic. Like, the Texans don't have a general manager. Like, they're not making sound decisions with their trading situations because Bill O'Brien was being head coach and general manager kind of in both roles. But I think what we see now, I mean, Jacob Martin was all over this game. He sacked Brady. He seemed to be really bringing sort of a real pass rush threat that we haven't seen much of with Houston this year. So I thought that was really interesting. And really, maybe the criticism we've given Bill O'Brien for acting in both roles, maybe they're it's really paying off. And we've seen it pay off with the Laremy Tunsil trade. I mean, Tunsil has been a huge upgrade on that offensive line as well. So I think it kind of showed that that might be a smart choice for them, and that might be working there this season.
Definitely the moves that they made at the beginning of the year were kind of a push your chips to the center of the table, seemed to be getting the pieces that they needed right now to be better this season, specifically the Tunsil trade, and, you know, seize the window that you have with Watson on a rookie contract. And I do think I agree with you. I think it's this game definitely says more about the Texans, because it was them going toe-to-toe with the biggest threat in their conference. And the Patriots always seem to have a couple speed bump games. This year it happened to be the Texans. But I think the big question for the Patriots is, you know, we've seen Brady dropping breadcrumbs the last couple weeks about not having enough weapons around him. Obviously, they don't have Gronkowski. He doesn't have a lot of receivers that he's comfortable with or trusts. You know, they made the midseason trade for Sanu, but he clearly doesn't have enough around him right now that he's comfortable with. So I guess the question will be, will they be able to muster enough offense? We've seen them in these ruts before, and we're used to Brady figuring a way out of it. But before this second wave of championships, there was a whole bunch of seasons where they just didn't have enough and they couldn't muster their way out of it. So I think the question is, how does this season end up? Does this, you know, accrued knowledge that Brady has to be able to make something out of nothing that's contributed to the second wave of championships, is that enough? And does he figure it out again? Or is this a year where they just really don't have the pieces to make it work?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the biggest question. And the interesting thing too is, like, the missed extra point, I was just kind of like, wow, like these Patriots are facing some kind of like plebeian NFL issues that seem to plague other teams and have really affected other teams, like Stephen Gostkowski, losing him for the season. You know, you're just like, oh, it's just the kicker. But, you know, one point in this game was not the difference. But it's just kind of like little things that hadn't really been an issue for them in seasons past. Just something as simple as the kicker is now sort of a hot mess there as well. They're on their fourth kicker of the season. This week was their fourth guy. So it's kind of like that's something that hasn't really popped up there in a while either. And it's kind of a everyday average Joe NFL team issue that they're experiencing this season.
Well, there's a lot to cover. Week 13 action. We'll get into the new number one seed in the AFC for the time being and lots more. We'll take a quick break first, and then we'll get into the rest of it. Kaylin, now for the rest of Sunday's games. We'll start with the most anticipated best matchup of the weekend, the 49ers at the Ravens, which unfortunately the least number of people saw, or maybe not the least number, but much lower number of people saw than befitting of the matchup, since it was just a regional Fox game jammed into one of the 8 games at 1 p.m. I guess the reason is that Fox can protect the broadcast, and then this was a week when CBS was the one with the big 4:25 p.m. afternoon window, so they could only put that into the 1 p.m. game, and it makes sense that Fox would protect it. Also, Patriots-Texans made sense for a night game anyway, but unfortunately, here in New York, where I am recording, I got boxed out of watching that game by the terrible New York teams. I had Packers, Giants, and Jets, Bengals, and I know you're so in bad. Florida, and you had who was on yours?
Yeah, in Florida, I was visiting my grandparents for Thanksgiving, and I'm still down here. We had Browns Steelers on CBS, which was better than the New York matchups, I think. And then we had Bucks Jaguars, which, you know, was not that eventful. But we'll get to that later. We'll get to Nick Foles and that debacle later on. But yeah, I mean, everyone, you know, the big talk of this game was like, is this going to be the Super Bowl? Is this did we just see what will be the Super Bowl rematch, Ravens 49ers? And I honestly hope it is, for the sake of just the fact that most of the nation was pirating this on Reddit and getting kicked off of streams. And God bless the three or four people who DM'd me different links to try to watch this game on Reddit. And I couldn't get any of them to work on my computer, but they did work on my phone. So I had like the TV going, and I had Red Zone on my computer, and then I had my little phone screen playing Ravens 49ers. So yeah, I really hope, I think there's a good chance these two teams will meet for the Super Bowl. Although I would also never count out Bill Belichick when it comes to if he meets the Ravens again in an AFC championship game. But yeah, let's hope they meet again, so then we can all watch it and we can all enjoy these two teams that had a great game that did not disappoint.
Yeah, I mean, it really did live up to the hype, which, you know, we don't always see. And, got off to an interesting start, right? I mean, the Ravens punted for the first time since week 9. This was week 13. The 49ers scored an opening drive touchdown, which I believe was the first team to do that versus Baltimore this year. But really, it was, you could see that these two teams are really the class of their divisions. I mean, there are a couple teams in each conference at the top, couple teams at the top of each conference. Ravens are clearly there in the AFC. The 49ers are clearly there in the NFC. And matching the two up just sort of affirmed that, you know, both of these teams are going to be in the mix when it comes, you know, late January, February. You know, I think really what stood out to me the most about this game was that the Ravens are a team that can win in so many different ways. And I think the brilliance of Lamar Jackson is that when you have a wet day where he only throws for 100 yards, he can rush for 100 yards and he can pick up that key first down where he really just kind of followed the blockers as if he was a running back. We saw him with that excellent juke earlier in the game, and he's just so difficult to defend, and he gives you the ability to match up with different defenses, to match up in different weather conditions, and you always know that you're going to have a chance with him in the game, and that was my biggest takeaway.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one good example of that was, I think it was their second touchdown where, you know, he ran the touchdown in, and you could just tell the way that their offenses run. And Gary wrote a little bit about that this morning, how defenses have a hard time figuring out where the ball went on a certain play. And that play was, you know, a fake to the running back. I think it was Edwards. And at that point, and then Lamar came around the left side and it was just sort of wide open for him. Mark Andrews, the tight end, was blocking really well on that side. But you saw, if you rewatch the play slowly, you see Nick Bosa goes straight for the fullback Juszczyk, and then Edwards, and he's totally turned around, and by the time he notices, oh, Lamar Jackson kept the ball, it's too late, and Lamar is, you know, around the left side there, and that was actually the side where Bosa was aligned to. So had he not sort of bit on that Gus Edwards fake, he would have maybe been in a position to make that play on Lamar. And so I thought that was really interesting, because Nick Bosa is having a great, great season, and he is by all means a great pass rusher and a great player, is going to be a great player in this league. But even he was prone to getting a little bit turned around with this Ravens offense. And I also think, you know, even though the 49ers lost this game, it was certainly a success for them defensively and offensively, but certainly the defense showed they are still, you know, top of the league in terms of, that defense. Like, no team has held the Ravens to just 20 points this season. That was their lowest score. And yes, it was raining, so that does play a factor into it as well. But I thought it showed the strength of their defense, because coming into this game, the Ravens, I believe, were averaging 35.1 points per game. So, you know, that's a huge drop off from that. And on third down, they were 30% on third down in this game, and they came into the game averaging like close to 49% on third down. So I thought that was, you know, I thought the game was, it really showed the 49ers defense is, it showed that they're strong, and they've had a hard stretch late in the season here with all the teams that they're playing. They've been some tough matchups, and each week they continue to show that they are, you know, the class of the league.
Yeah, and I referenced that third down conversion. Basically, the game kind of came down to that. They had a third and one, and Lamar Jackson gets the two-yard run, and that allows them to run the clock out to set up the 49-yard field goal by Tucker. And on that drive, it was 12 plays, 39 yards, 6.5 minutes off the clock. So that just shows kind of the run-oriented offense, how it can drain clocks in that situation. But by no means was that – I mean – They were able to capitalize on that situation and set up the game-winning field goal, but, you know, it's not guaranteed they convert that third down, and it's not guaranteed that, you know, a 49-yard field goal, Justin Tucker is the one you'd want in that situation to kick it, right. But 49 yards in the rain is no chip shot. So it really did come down to the wire, and also the 49ers are coming from the West Coast, playing at 1 p.m., so... You know, it would be very interesting to see this matchup again, and it would probably look a lot different. So that's why I think, you know, hopefully we all get to see that at some point later in the season.
Yeah. I also, this is super random, but the Ravens have like my favorite player in football, number 42, their fullback, Patrick Ricard. He's also a defensive lineman, and he's just like this huge fullback, and he had a lot of action today, obviously, because they were running the ball a lot. And I just think it's so cool to see a two-way player, and he's a really interesting player, and I like it when he's out there, and I like old school fullback use, so I loved watching him today.
Well, Connor Orr was in Baltimore, so there'll be more from him you can read on the MMQB. We'll move on to the next, another big game in the 1 p.m. window, Steelers-Browns. Browns have not swept a series versus the Steelers since 1988, which is crazy.
So sad.
And so obviously, sad. You know, there was a lot of anticipation going into this game. The last time these two teams met just 2 weeks ago, 33 players were fined for their role in the brouhaha, obviously with Myles Garrett suspended indefinitely for hitting Mason Rudolph over the head with a helmet. Today's game was tamer, but that storyline still lingered and set the stage for today. And I think really what we saw in the game was the difference in the head coaching experience levels, right? And obviously Freddie Kitchens going to the movies on Saturday night with a shirt that his daughter bought for him saying Pittsburgh started him certainly did not lose the game for the Steelers, and it's also, or did not lose the game for the Browns, excuse me. Also, you know, I hate to be like, oh, well, the outcome, you know, based on the outcome should not be determinative of our opinion on the shirt. However, I will say, you know, it was pointed out by several Steelers players after the game, like Mike Tomlin isn't wearing that shirt. Ramon Foster said that. Veteran offensive lineman says Mike Tomlin's not wearing that shirt. And I do think it's, you know, for a team that has had issues with discipline and, you know, players wearing watches and having to change their cleats and having undisciplined plays like the Myles Garrett situation.
Harassing people on Twitter.
And coming off of that game where the emotions really took over and your players acted out, endangering other players because of it, I don't think it's fair to stoke the fire like that. And so I do think that for those reasons, I think it's fair to criticize Kitchens for wearing the shirt.
I totally agree. And it just, I mean, if that was the only thing, like if there was not all the things that you just mentioned where they've had problems, like physical evidence, you know, in terms of discipline and how this team is behaving on and off the field, if there weren't all of that already, then sure, go ahead, wear the shirt. It's not going to be a big deal. But when taken in the context of the season of where they are now, I mean, I think it really does matter. And I mean, he's the head coach. I get he didn't wear it to the game. And his, I think, you know, what he said was he didn't think he was going to be seen wearing it. Sure, but you're still a head coach of a football team and you went out in public and then you let someone take a picture of you in it. I mean, so I do think it matters, and it just points to exactly how, you know, this team, and there was the thing with Demaryius Randall this week where he didn't even travel to this game because of something that had happened during the week in Cleveland, and they haven't said what it was, but that was clearly a discipline issue as well. He wasn't playing in this game, didn't travel with the team. So there's just a lot going on there, and you can tell that if they did have a more experienced head coach, somebody like Mike Tomlin or just anybody else, who does have that experience, I do think they'd have more wins this year, and I think they would be playing at a higher level. Because it does come down to how your head coach acts.
Yeah, and that's really the decision that Jimmy Haslam, John Dorsey are going to have to make, where we put together this talented roster. Did our head coach get the most out of it? And also, the narrative that the Steelers really seemed to be pushing was that our guy is more experienced. You could hear that underlying tone in their comments, right? Like, mm-hmm. Mike Tomlin wouldn't do that, but also Vince Williams tweeting afterwards that Mike Tomlin is a great coach and, you know, experienced, they know how to handle these situations. And so really when the season's on the line, which this game it was for the mm-hmm. Steelers, they're very much still in the AFC playoff picture now, and the Browns, because of the loss, are pretty much out of it.
Right, totally. And I think, you know, the question of does he get the most out of the talent that they have, right now that answer is definitely, certainly not. This was another game where Odell he was sort of invisible. He had 3 catches for 29 yards in a must-win game, as we just said. And it's just, now I feel like last time we were talking about Odell, it was, you know, before the midseason mark, so it was kind of still like, okay, they might figure it out with him, he might be worth you know, what they've invested in him. But now I think we're far enough along in the season to see that, I don't know if it's Baker needs more time to develop chemistry with him and to develop a relationship with him as a receiver. I'm not sure what the issue is. But it's clear that, you know, adding Odell to this roster, it just doesn't seem like it's been worth it so far for Cleveland.
Which was the story in New York as well. Although staying in New York clearly would not have been a fun season. Right. Either. So, so moving on to another game that kind of was a decisive for one team, Chiefs 40, Raiders 9. Obviously, this was a big matchup in the AFC West because the Raiders were a little surprising, right? They were more in the mix than we thought. The Chiefs had a couple games where they faltered early. The Raiders did better than expected coming to this big matchup. But going in, you know, Andy Reid is terrific after a bye. I think he was 17-3 after a bye. Now he's 18-3.
Yeah.
And now with the Chiefs at 8-4 and the Raiders at 6-6 and the Chiefs having swept the season series, they're, you know, essentially the division race is over. Probably more importantly for the Chiefs is that they've got a lot of momentum going into this AFC Championship game rematch next Sunday in Foxborough. And the game doesn't have as much juice to it as we probably would have thought in January. The Chiefs' record is not, you know, they're not vying for, you know, home field advantage with the Patriots the way things stand right now. But I still think we see that magic that they have, the Mahomes magic. And I think this is going to be an interesting measuring stick because the Patriots have had some struggles.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I think the Raiders were a tough team to figure out this season and still kind of are a tough team to figure out. But, you know, after last week's blowout loss to the Jets, it sort of became clear that they might not be that hot team that we really thought they could be a couple weeks earlier. But I think this game for the Chiefs, it was really important for them. And I think for Mahomes individually, because I think he got his first rushing touchdown of the season in this game. And you know, he'd struggled with injuries throughout this season and struggled with injuries that specifically were limiting his mobility a little bit. And so I think that was a really good sign to see him sort of high-stepping it into the end zone, as we know he can do, and it's one of his greatest skills. So I thought that was really promising and bodes really well for them going forward. It seems like Mahomes is really back to full strength there. And yeah, I think they're definitely the AFC is going to be an interesting playoff picture once it all comes together.
Yeah, and you know, not looking ahead too much to next week, but I do remember last year's regular season matchup between the Patriots and the Chiefs, and it was one of those games where you could really see Mahomes almost getting better in real time. You could see him figuring out the Patriots' defense and coming back in the second half, and Then when they played in the AFC Championship game, it was anybody's game, right? You know, it could have gone either way. So I think, as you mentioned, now that we're seeing sort of Mahomes, he had that week off to rest. He probably is a little bit healthier, and they're coming off this big double-digit decisive win, which they haven't had in a while. I think it'll be interesting to see how that momentum carries forward.
Yeah, I'm excited. That's going to be a good game.
Another division matchup that, now this is interesting. The AFC South is getting interesting, Kalen. So the Titans beat the Colts 31-17. Now, in many ways, this has been the season of the backup quarterback. And early in the year, Jacoby Brissett was the one wearing that mantle, right? Andrew Luck retires, surprisingly, on the eve of the season. Jacoby Brissett seems to pick up, you know, where we expected the team to have left off. And now in December, we're talking about Ryan Tannehill. Who knew? 5-2 as a starter, well over 70% completion percentage, 12 passing touchdowns to 4 interceptions. Seems like a good option for Tennessee to perhaps re-sign. He's on a 1-year deal now. Is there a future for Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee beyond this season, Kalen?
I certainly think that there is, because they made it very clear, even before this season, it was pretty obvious that Mariota was not going to be the answer going forward there. And, you know, they've been scouting quarterbacks pretty closely. And I think now that Tannehill has had a renaissance, a career renaissance here, I think why not? I mean, I think they should go for it, because I feel like in today, you know, drafting a quarterback is so hard. It's so difficult to know how those guys are going to turn out. And I feel like if they continue on this path and Tannehill continues to string games together where he is playing well and playing at this level, I think they should definitely give him a chance next year. I mean, maybe bring in somebody else too and make a competition. But I think he should certainly be in the running for your starting job next season. Because I think that's a lot easier than the alternative, which is taking a risk in the draft or looking around for another veteran quarterback on the market when he's probably one of the better veteran quarterback options who will be available next offseason. So, yeah, I think Tannehill as a Titan going forward would be a smart decision.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. You know, there's been some talk of a franchise tag with him. The Titans, I'm sure, would prefer some kind of short-term modest deal, and then you draft someone. If there's someone that you like when you're drafting, you draft a quarterback. But for now, this has been – Tannehill has helped turn around their season, and here they are right in the mix in the division, and the Titans and the Texans play twice in the last 3 weeks of the season. So the AFC South is totally up for grabs, and the Titans could win it.
I know, it's so interesting, because I felt like last week's Thursday night football matchup, which was Texans-Colts, was like the, you know, whoever wins this is going to win the AFC South sort of end-all, be-all game. And, you know, now, just two weeks later, it's very clear that the Titans are still very much in this. And it's crazy that they haven't, I didn't even realize until we were putting these notes together today, I didn't even realize they had yet to play the Texans. Like, it's crazy. Because this late in the season to play them two more times. So I think that worked out really well for the Titans. And I would be stoked if I was Tannehill and, like, if I was on that Titans roster coaching for them. Like, they've got a really good opportunity.
Yeah, very interesting turn of events. Another interesting turn of events. Just going to jump off with that transition, Kalen. All right. So,
I love it. Roll with it.
The Bucs beat the Jaguars 28-11. And the reason we're talking about this game now rather than in the lightning round, which is where we probably thought it would have been, is that after a first half in which the Jaguars didn't score and managed just 105 yards of offense, Nick Foles was benched for Gardner Minshew, who had been a revelation when Foles was injured. But then they went back to Foles, and ineffective in the first half. Marone makes the move. The question now is if they stick with Minshew for the remainder of the season. Marone said at his post-game press conference he would not announce who would start until he had talked to both Foles and Minshew, which you could probably interpret a lot of ways. I would interpret that as they are probably going to go with Minshew. Now, if that is the case, if they do stick with Minshew the remainder of the season, a lot of implications moving forward.
Yeah, this is a really tough call, because, yes, Foles has been total crap in the two complete games that he's played this year, which was losing by 20 to the Colts and losing by 22 to the Titans. But I almost feel like it's not enough. I feel like it's not enough to really like give up on him completely. I mean, I think the fact that they have Minshew obviously changes that, because they still want to win this season, and Minshew probably gives them the best option to do that this season. But it's a tricky situation because they're far from the playoff hunt in the AFC South. As we just discussed, they're at the bottom of that division. So it's almost like you might, I don't know, there's an argument to be made for playing Foles because you want to know what you really have in him, because that was a huge signing for them last season. 4 years, $88 million, $50 million guaranteed, which I think was a franchise record for guaranteed money in a contract. And at the time, Shad Khan, the Jaguars owner, was raving about how excited he was for getting the quarterback who had led the Eagles to the Super Bowl 52 win. So it seems like I understand Foles has been very disappointing, but he is coming back from an injury still, and we don't know how much that affects what his level of play right now. It's hard to tell, but I feel like it's still like too soon to just completely give up on him, especially when it comes down to what the team has already invested in him. Although I did read, you know, if he's got a dead cap hit of $33.875 million if Foles is released before June 1st, but that number would drop to $21.375 million if he's released after June 1st, and then a post June 1st trade would save the Jaguars $15 million, and that would just be a dead cap hit of $6.25 million. So that would be a lot less if they waited. So yeah, it's crazy to think how far they've come from that signing and where they're at now with Foles. But I do think he should get a little bit more playing time just to see what they have in him, because he has been a player who's had such a strange career arc that I feel like it's hard to tell with him.
Yeah, I think with the economics, as you referenced, you know, the out in the contract was really in 2021. So to try to move on from the contract in 2020 would be a challenge. It would be a pretty decent sized burden for the Jaguars cap space. So that makes you think that, you know, economics generally play a role in decision making with teams. Like, of course, that's we see that all the time. And so it would be, you know, easy to see how they would make the decision based on that. The other factor here, though, is that Doug Marrone's job status is a big question mark, right? And so this is where you always get into that tricky situation where people are not on the same timetable, and who you know, whose priorities or interests are shorter term or longer term than others. Right. And I think that's where the challenge comes in. So I do think it's going to be a sticky decision. It's going to be interesting to see what they decide. Like I said earlier, you could parse those words however you want, and you could see an argument for going with either guy at this point. So it'll be interesting to see what they decide.
Yeah.
All right. So this was the upset of the day. Dolphins 37, Eagles 31. And this was, I enjoyed this game thoroughly. I think everyone did, because the fake field goal that they scored a touchdown on was just fantastic. Just really unbelievable, truly a play that we have never seen before. And that is a very hard thing to say, because, you know, I did a story last year about, you know, all the offensive innovations, you know, in the league, focusing on the Chiefs and Mahomes. But really, everything is cyclical. It's all come from somewhere else. It's all recycled from the old days.
High school football. Or college football or something. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure at some level, you know, we've seen similar formations and similar results like this. But for this to happen on the NFL stage, you have the punter holder, you know, little shovel-ish pass to the kicker. I mean, that was just stunning. It was just remarkable. It was a work of art, Kalen.
And it was, I mean, I just like watched it probably like 16 times in a row, because I just couldn't. I was trying to understand like the two different like bunches of players that they had on each side, and then how the Eagles defense kind of lined up for what they were expecting, which was not what ended up happening. Like, I don't think they put any I don't think they put any real stock in the kicker, as he was sort of in the slot there, like away from the other bunch of, it was one receiver and I think it was like three offensive linemen on the left side. So I don't think they put any stock in the kicker being the target of that play in the end zone, because all the other, like, I think there were like five Eagles defenders that were just like grouped with the bunch that was away from him. And he just kind of ran up into the end zone and there he was. And it was just so great.
Yeah. Great. It was, they totally abandoned him, thinking, probably playing the odds, that the kicker's not going to catch this. And so it was just, It was beautiful, and it really speaks to the fact that, you know what, go Brian Flores, right? He's been put in a tough situation early in the season. Listen, I wrote about the tanking. We asked the question, you know, are they going 0-16? But the caveat to the tanking was always that the roster was not constructed for them to win this year. But the players and the coaches aren't trying to lose, and Brian Flores has been emptying out the bag of tricks. And the fact that he has three wins with that roster is just remarkable, and really does honestly make him a candidate in the Coach of the Year race. And we'll get to some of these other examples later, but for all these coaches who are bellyaching about their rosters, no one's roster shedded more talent this offseason, or you know, basically purposefully also during the season than the Dolphins, right? And he's in a position where he's got these players fighting. He's coming up with these creative plays. Like, for any owner that's got a coach that's bellyaching, all they have to do is say, look what Brian Flores has done with less.
Seriously. And I think a play like that, too, really, in terms of morale there, in terms of getting the players to fight and getting them to still be invested in the season, even though you're very clearly there's a huge drop off from every other team in the Dolphins. I think a play like that, and like even practicing that, would be really fun. And just knowing that you have that on the play sheet, whether or not you end up calling it in a game, I think that would really be something that would kind of like get you motivated and get you into it. And so I think that's really smart from a coaching perspective to try stuff like that and then have it work against, you know, a team that considers itself to be kind of sort of in the playoff race. But yeah, it's crazy. I mean, they put up 409 yards on the Eagles. You know, so it's crazy. It's just, they really outperformed in a way that we haven't seen yet this season.
Yeah, and you talk about morale boost too, you know, beating a team that won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. And obviously, you know, Flores coached against them in that game when he was with the Patriots. But think about that, right? A team that, A, like, is known for some of his trick plays, not the last few weeks, because the last 3 weeks they've been burned on trick plays. But Philly special was, they won a Super Bowl with a trick play, right? So now you're beating a team that it has a championship in recent memory. You're catching them off guard with things, a trick play that, you know, supposedly that's something that they should have in their wheelhouse, right? And so I just think that is a really big statement win for the Dolphins. And I don't know what's going to happen with their roster. I think it is hard when you take something down to the studs and try to build it back up. I think there's a hard road ahead, but I think they found the right coach with Brian Flores. Like, I think that's what this season is showing. Mm-hmm. And that's been really impressive.
Did anybody name that play yet? Did it get, you know how there was a Miami Miracle last year against the Patriots where they had that lateral, and I don't know, has it been named? It needs a name.
There was a, someone referenced the play call. Steve White from NFL Network tweeted it, and I'm blanking on what the name was, Kalen, but he named the play call that they called it, but,
what the Dolphins named
it. The Dolphins named it, but yes, you're right. There should
it
be
needs
some,
like a, whatever that's called. I don't know what a term, a
moniker, something, yeah, moniker, some kind of catchphrase. And, you know, and on the flip side, like, as you said, the Eagles are kind of sort of in the playoff race. The only reason they are is because the NFC East is a dumpster fire this year. I mean, you know, here you talk about the Cowboys lose on Thanksgiving. Great. You should be going into Sunday's game, right? You're going into a game with a depleted roster, your division rival loses. What a great Sunday ahead. And so, you know, I think it's interesting because they win the Super Bowl 2 years ago, and it was this like incredible magical run, right? And they've just totally lost the magic since then. Wentz has lost the magic, Peterson's lost the magic, and I think it's a tough question of figuring out what exactly went wrong. What elements are they missing now that they didn't have that season? And you know, obviously Wentz gets hurt, Foles comes in, and he's the one that leads them to the Super Bowl, but we haven't seen the Wentz that was the MVP candidate until he got injured. And last year, coming off the injury, you figure, okay, you know, it takes a while to work back into form. There have just been so many problems across the team. And, you know, I see a lot of criticism of Doug Peterson, and I think that it's fair to ask questions, but it's interesting to the 180 that has happened in less than 2 years.
Definitely. And I think Wentz was fine in this game. I think obviously the biggest problem against the Dolphins was the secondary and Devontae Parker just toasting the Eagles secondary all game, whether it was Ronald Darby or if it was Jalen Mills, like nobody had a chance against him. So I think that was the biggest issue in this game, but there's just been a lot of things going wrong for the Eagles this year, but nobody wants the NFC East. So who knows? They, you know, the Cowboys could very easily lose to the Bears this Thursday at Chicago. Like, I was just thinking, who am I going to pick for that game? And I honestly am like totally back and forth on like who I think could win, because I could totally see the Cowboys losing that game in Chicago. So yeah, I mean, that division is just really, really, a hot mess. Dumpster fire, as you said.
Total dumpster fire. All right, we'll get back to the lightning round, but first we'll take a quick break. All right, now on to the lightning round. All right, we'll start with an NFC West matchup. Rams beat the Cardinals 34-7. Talked a lot about the playoff picture, right? It's December. That's the main thing that's on our mind. Rams obviously needed a win like this to stay in the race. They had that ugly 45-6 loss last week to the Ravens. But the NFC is really a tough picture. If you're not an NFC East team that will back into the playoffs, if you're looking for a wild card spot, there's not a lot of wiggle room. And the Vikings and Seahawks are ahead of the Rams right now. Now, obviously, one of those teams will lose on Monday night, unless they tie. But likely, you know, one of the teams will lose. And the Rams go from being in the Super Bowl to being on the outside looking in playoff position. Looking in at playoff position. came out wrong, Kaylin. It's the lightning round. I don't know. I'm frazzled.
You got that one. This was a game they really needed, and I wasn't sure that it was really going to be this decisive of a blowout. Like, I actually think I picked the Cardinals to win because of, you know, how disappointing this Rams team has been recently in this season. And specifically with the offense, you know, so I was surprised that they were able to put up 34 points so easily and so quickly against the Cardinals. So I think that's a really good sign for them. But yeah, like you said, the NFC is really, really tough. There are going to be several really good teams that are not going to make the playoffs. But I think this was a good start for them.
All right. Another AFC West. Moving on to the AFC West. Broncos 23, Chargers 20. Okay. This was just a classic Chargers heartbreaker. Like, I think
so many,
what, 8 losses have all been 7 points or less. They just always seem to have these heartbreaking finishes. And I don't think you could get more heartbreaking than this one, because you have this last chance throw by Drew Lock, intended essentially to draw a flag. You know that going into it. I think Cortland Sutton did a good job of getting the flag on Casey Hayward. I think you could see why they threw it, but I think, I don't know. It was a little borderline, right? But he gets the flag. Yeah. The Chargers lose on this game-winning field goal by the Broncos, and it's just another sad flight back to Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's really been depressing for the Chargers. They have had so many close ones. And I think Drew Lock, I mean, I've been excited. I've actually been weirdly excited to see Drew Lock play this season, just because I thought I thought he had a lot of potential as a four-year starter in Missouri. The Broncos drafted him in the second round of last year's draft, and then he went on IR pretty early in the preseason. And then, you know, they made the choice to wait a while before bringing him back because they had a bye week where they thought it would be good to bring him back after the bye. So I thought it would be really interesting to see like what they had in him, and he had a really good first quarter through two touchdowns to Courtland Sutton, who is a rising star in that offense. So I thought it was kind of a promising development, and I think it was actually a good choice to have him. Obviously they didn't choose for him to injure his thumb in the preseason, but I think it was actually, in the terms of the long run of his career, I think it will be actually a blessing in disguise, that he could sit and learn and watch a little bit longer than, you know, maybe he would have otherwise if he hadn't hurt his thumb. So I thought it was sort of, you know, a promising first start, first win for Drew Locke. But yeah, I totally agree that PI call was definitely borderline, and it was exactly, it followed the strategy of the Broncos, like to a T, like just exactly what they were trying to get out of that last second play. And then for Brandon McManus to hit that field goal was also really surprising too, considering I think he was like 2 of 4 on the season for over 50 yards field goals. So that was not a sure thing. It was not like Justin Tucker trotting out there by any means. So, which makes it even more heartbreaking for the Chargers, because there's a very good chance that McManus would not hit that field goal and make that.
Yeah, it was, and it was, the story really was, like you said, Drew Locke's debut, I think it was up and down, right? He got off to a good start, 14-0 lead. He had that kind of ugly interception late in the game. Right. Some good, some bad, which is kind of what you'd expect from a rookie. And yeah, he has had an interesting trajectory so far. I mean, I remember I was in Nashville on his draft night, and he was there, didn't get taken round one. His agency's based in Nashville, so he's up at the agency office on round, you know, day two, not sure when he's going to get taken. He came back for his press conference. Clearly had a chip on his shoulder about the whole thing, which understandably. So it'll be interesting to see how that continues to fuel him, and now that we've gotten a look at him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next game. Packers visit the Giants at a snowy MetLife Stadium that for a while looked a little bit more like Lambeau Field. Packers win 31-13, but I've got a lot to say about the way Pat Shurmur handled the post-game press conference, which I hinted at a little bit earlier, right? He called the Giants a historically young team that is competing against good football teams. And as I said before, if any owner hears this from your head coach, all you have to do is point what Brian Flores is doing with the Dolphins. Brian Flores has more wins with the Dolphins than Pat Shurmur has with the Giants. Now, the Giants roster has a lot of flaws, but it is not as bad as the Dolphins roster. And I think, you know, looking at it, look, Ben McAdoo was fired. His record was 13-15. Pat Shurmur is 7-21 right now. And I think the comments after the game really signaled a little bit of a desperation to me, right? I think everyone knows this is kind of reaching a boiling point. And of course the Giants, right? Their history has never been to be quick with the, you know, quick to make changes in the organization. And so were they to do this again, you know, after making a quick decision on McAdoo, probably against their nature. But at this point, I think all signs are pointing in that direction.
Yeah. I just want to know, do we have stats on the youth of the Giants team? Like, what are our stats there, Pat? Like, let's back it up with some numbers. Like, historically young, what does that mean? Historically in the history of the NFL, in the history of the NFC? I mean, it's just a little bit broad of a blanket statement there. So, you know, if that's going to be kind of the shifting blame of why you are where you are, let me get some cold, hard facts. You know, if we had a researcher for this podcast, I would, you know, or if I had more time on Sunday trying to watch like 3 games at once, I would look more into that. And maybe that's something to do for this coming week. Yeah, maybe that's a newsletter, morning huddle for us, some content this week. Let's see how young this Giants team is compared to every other team, or, you know, because, like, honestly, if you probably did the age right now, they might not even be the youngest team in in the NFL. I can't like name another one off the top of my head, but you never know. But yeah, I agree. Things are trending down for that team. And actually, when you look at the teams that won today that were surprising, like two win teams coming into this week, which was Washington and Miami, and also the Bengals, the winless Bengals got a win. It was like the Giants were kind of left out of the party this week because they're a two win team. So now the other two win teams have left them in the dust. And, you know, they're just kind of down there at the bottom with Cincinnati.
And hey, things could get really crazy. Giants could end up with the number one overall pick before we know it. Who knows? That's right. Who knows? That's right. All right, moving on to another game. Washington stuns with a 29-21 win against Carolina. Now, this game was actually a lot more entertaining than I thought. There was a successful Panthers onside kick, which
was beautiful. It was a beautiful,
wonderful play in today's NFL. Onside kicks that are successful are really such a novelty. So I really appreciated that effort on that play, followed by a Washington goal line stand. And how about it? In the NFC East, 3-win Washington had the best week.
Yeah, that is totally
insane. That's all I have to say. I don't have a lot more to say about this game, Kaylin.
Totally, totally insane. Yeah, I mean, Kyle Allen, I mean, Cam Newton has got to come back as the Panthers quarterback next season. I don't think that's really a topic of conversation. I don't even think that's up for debate anymore after the stretch of games that Kyle Allen has had. So, yeah, I agree. There's not really a lot else to say.
Yeah, that was a rough ending to the game for Kyle Allen. All right, last game, probably the least hyped game of the week. Bengals Jets. Now, there was this great stat floating around from ESPN that since the black cat ran onto the field during Giants Cowboys, that teams with a cat mascot,
oh yeah,
were winless. Who would have thought that the winless Bengals, overall winless for the season, would have been the one to break that trend? But then enter the Jets into the picture, and they bring Andy Dalton back. They win. Bengals beat the Jets 22-6. Now, a couple quick notes on this. One is it's so important to avoid an 0-16 season because I talked to some of the Browns players on that team earlier this year when I was doing a story about the Dolphins, and they all talked about how that's just like a stain on you. When you're part of an 0-16 team, that affects the trajectory of your career. It's just something that you always carry that label with you, whether you like it or not. And the other interesting thing was, you know, they had this, you know, they go to Ryan Finley and then you go back to Andy Dalton and don't generally love that, you know, if you're going to see what Finley has before you make any decisions going into next year, okay, makes sense to stick with him. But I do think in this case, if you're trying to avoid this winless stain on your new head coach, on your players, then, well, they got their win with Dalton, so...
Yeah, and I think they'd seen enough from Finley to know, like, okay, we're going to be in the quarterback market again. Or not really again, because he was not a high-round pick or anything like that. But I think they'd seen enough from Finley to know, all right, well, yeah, let's go back to Dalton because we need to win a freaking game. So it was nice to see Dalton get back out there and, you know, win one. And, I think he set the touchdown record for the Bengals. So that was nice. And yeah, like Zach Taylor got the Gatorade bath or the water bucket. I don't think it was Gatorade. It looked pretty clear. The water bucket bath afterwards, and they all described it as an emotional win. So that was really nice to see. And I think only the Jets could pull that one off for the Bengals.
Yeah. You know, another reason why it's good to win early in the year, Kaylin, is to avoid a December Gatorade bath. So that is something that future head coaches should keep in mind.
That does not sound pleasant. That does not sound like a nice experience. I'd be running from that if I were him.
All right, well, it was an entertaining week 13. Thanks for breaking it down, Kaylin. It was a great podcast. Enjoyed chatting with you this evening.
Thanks, JV. Hope you guys enjoyed it too, and you're Thanksgiving. Oh my God, how do you plural? Thanksgivings were wonderful.
All right. Well, the MMQB Monday Morning Podcast is Kaylin Kaler and Jenny Vrentis this week. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravik is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.